Okay, good evening, everyone. It's good to see. This parsha is Parshas Bullock. Parshas Bullock is unique. It's unique because the parsha from beginning to end is not written internally within the Jewish people, so to speak. No Jew interacts with Bullock. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't appear in Parshas Bullock. It's about a king, the king of Moab, Bullock ben Zippor, who sees the Jewish people coming, wants to attack the Jewish people, and he drafts Bilam ben Beor, strange phenomenon, a prophet of the nations of the world, and drafts him to try to curse the Jewish people. And the parsha is the story of Bilam's attempts to be able to somehow attack the Jewish people. The Gemara even refers to this as Sifrei Shel Bilam. Right? The Moshe Rabbeinu calls it Sifrei v'Sifrei Shel Bilam. Right? The prophecy of Bilam that we have here, Parshas Bullock, is almost a unit for itself. And it's not just unique in that regard, of course. It's unique in terms of the story which it tells us about this Navi. This Navi Bilam, this prophet of the nations of the world, such a complex person.
So many ambiguities about his personality. What are we supposed to do with him? How are we supposed to understand this whole phenomenon? Very, very difficult. Chazal tell us that Bilam was able to prophesize in a very significant way. They go so far as to say, Chazal say, that it says in the pasuk at the end of the Torah that no Navi arose amongst the Jewish people like Moshe Rabbeinu. And they say, no Navi arose amongst the Jewish people like Moshe Rabbeinu. But amongst the nations of the world, there did arise someone who could have been considered, so to speak, a parallel, a peer to Moshe Rabbeinu in prophecy. And who is that? Bilam. So we need to really understand this phenomena of Bilam. And over the years, we've tried to discuss aspects of it. Today, I want to try again and to try to discuss a particular aspect of what's going on here with the story of the Nevuas Bilam. The Rashi brings a famous statement from Chazal, which is in itself the object that we have to discuss. The pasuk says, "Vayishlach malachim." Bullock sent messengers to Bilam ben Beor, Pisora, to Pisor, Asher al Anor, Likro lo Lamar, to call him, to summon him, saying, "Hinei am yotza mimitzrayim." Mitzrayim, there's a nation who's left Egypt. They've covered the land. Who Yoshev Mimuli? They're sitting here opposite. So please, I want you to curse this people. Says Rashi. Vim Tomar, Mipneima Hishra Kodesh Baruch Hu, Shchinasoi Al Goy Roshoi. Why did Hashem make His Shchina, make His presence settle upon a Goy Roshoi? A wicked person, not from Hashem's people. Kedesh leo pischan pelu umos loimar. And the Rashi gives the answer. So there shouldn't be an opening for the nations of the world to respond and to say, ilu hayu lanu nevi'im chazarnu lamutav. Had we been blessed with prophets, like you, the Jewish people, had prophets, we would have been better. We would have improved. Hemid lehem nevi'im. So Hashem gave them a prophet, they import to gather ha'olam, and in fact, the prophet seemed to make things worse. Shebetchila hayu gedurim bo arayos. Originally, they were limiting themselves from arayos, from improper relationships. You know that the final act of Bilam, when he failed to attack the Jewish people successfully with his mouth, the final act of Bilam was that he got the daughters of Moab to seduce the Jewish men. And in doing so, they were brought down. We were brought down. Says Chazal, the Navi got them to do that. You speak about a Navi of the nations. Oh, maybe he'll come and make them better. This Navi made them much worse. And that's, therefore, the response to the Umay Salem, a response to the nations of the world. That was the Navi. That was the Navi as they got. Now, this Medrash comes as found, forms of this Medrash are found in different places, in the Tanchuma, etc. However, I'd like to read to you the way the Medrash writes in the beginning of the Medrash Rabbah, classic Medrash, in the beginning of our Parsha. Zehu Shomer Akosuv Hatzur Tomim Poloi Kichol Drachov Mishpat. This is what the Pasuk means when it says, or this is an application of the Pasuk that says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu refers to him as the rock, that Tomim Poloi, that his actions are perfect, all his ways are just. Lo'iniach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Umas Ha'elam Pischein Pelo Asid Lovei. Hashem didn't leave for the nations of the world a pischein peh, an opening for the future to say, you Hashem, you caused us to be distant. What did Hashem do? Kishem shemid melochim v'chachamim u'neviim liYisrael kachem ilumais ha'olam. The same way Hashem established kings and sages and prophets for the Jewish people, he did for the nations of the world. Hemid shloima melech al Yisrael. We had Shlomo HaMelech, so to speak, king of the world, and they had Nebuchadnezzar. Zeh bana beis hamikdash. Shlomo HaMelech built the beis hamikdash and said many prayers and pleadings to Hashem. Zeh hichrivay v'charav v'gadav. And this one destroyed the beis hamikdash and cursed and blasphemed. As it says, El albama seyav adam el elyon. Nebuchadnezzar famously said, I'm going to climb up onto the clouds, I will be like Hashem. Nasan leDavid Oisher v'lochach habayis lishmoy. Hashem gave David HaMelech wealth, and David HaMelech lay awake at night, thinking about how he could build a Beis HaMikdash for the sake of Hashem with the wealth. V'nasan leHaman Oisher v'lochach umashleima l'toivcha. He gave Haman wealth, and Haman used the wealth to try to buy the heads of the Jewish people. Remember the 10,000 bricks of silver that he wanted to buy the Jewish people, the right to slaughter the Jewish people with. Every form of greatness that the Jewish people had, the nations had it too. Here we get to the punchline, so to speak, again. Rashi brings a version of this that we just read before. He appointed Moshe for the Jewish people as a prophet and Bilam for the nations. Look at the difference, look at the great divide between the prophets of the Jewish people and the prophets of the nations. Nevi'e Yisrael mazhirin es Yisrael min ha'averus. The Nevi'e Yisrael, the prophets of the Jewish people, warn the Jewish people to refrain from sin, as it says, and it brings a pasuk, v'ata ben adam tsefen esaticha v'amin, v'nevi sh'omen min ha'goyim hemit pirtza l'abed es ha'briyos min ha'elam. And the Navi of the nations of the world, again, brought them to sin, as Rashi brought. He told the daughters of Moab to seduce the Bnei Yisrael, to cause people to be lost from the world. The prophets of the Jewish people were merciful to the Jewish people and to the nations of the world. Yirmiyahu Hanavi prophesied, my heart goes to Moab. It will whisper or moan, so to speak, like the flute. V'chein Yecheskel, ben Adam so'ar altsur kina. Man, ben Adam, raise a lament over Tsur. Tsur is Tyre, right? Port city of Lebanon. V'zeach zori omad lakar umashleim achinam aloidavar. And this prophet of the nations is trying to destroy a nation, an umashleim, a whole nation, the Jewish people, aloidavar, for no reason. Lokach niftach parshas Bilam. Vaydia loma silech HaKadosh Baruch Hu ruach HaKadosh mil masaylam shezeh men mehem urheim ma'asa. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want to show you, I make a prophet from the nations of the world, I'll give you all the opportunities for the nations of the world and see what they're going to do with it. Re'im ma'asa. This is what it says. Now, this is a very interesting medrash. And it's a medrash I want to say at the outset of the shiur, that, you know, it's always hard to speak in tremendous generalizations. Chazal are to some degree speaking here in a generalization. They are to some degree speaking in a generalization, and one on some level, in other words, this is the tricky thing, one has to be very careful in the application of generalization. We have such a thing, of course, as we know, as the pious of the nations of the world. And we have such a thing, le'aleinu, as poshei Yisrael, as sinners of the Jewish people. There are no absolutes. Membership or ancestry doesn't guarantee you any of the specific qualities that they're going to be actualized in you for better or for worse, and whether part of the Jewish people or part of the nations of the world. Chazal, when they say that they gave a prophet to the nations of the world and look what happened, what they're trying to say in a certain sense was not, oh, Hashem chose someone and for them he chose a dud and for us he chose a great one. Mm-hmm. No. Chazal tell us many times that the prophet is in a certain sense a distillation of the people. Moshe Rabbeinu, for instance, who was a great, great man, but when the Jewish people worshipped the golden calf, Hashem said, Lech reid kishichei samcha. You have to go down from Har Sinai. Here you are. You've been up with me for 40 days and 40 nights in the most astounding and intense spiritual experience that a human being could possibly ever have. You're a great person. Your hands are clean. But your nation, whom you represent, just sinned, and therefore you can't be here anymore. The Navi, to some degree, is the representative and the representation of the people. And so, when Hashem chose the Navi of Bilam for the Umas Olam, it wasn't that He chose the best of them or that He chose the worst of them. He chose that which, in a certain sense, was a distillation of them. And therefore, again, we don't generalize. But in a certain sense, yes, this is it. Now, you still could be troubled by this and still could be offended by this. I'm going to try to explain what this is and where the division lies. And we're going to start at the very beginning. Now, last week, we were learning the beginning of Parshas Chukas, and we focused on how the Parah Aduma is there to cure death, to be metaher, to purify from death. And to purify from death by how? By the chayk, the unknown law. And we went back to look at the introduction of death into the world, back at the tree of knowledge, and how we would see that sin, or that really the prohibition of eating from the tree of knowledge, as the quintessential chok, as the quintessential inexplicable law. There was nothing wrong with the tree. It was a fig tree or a grapevine or whatever it was, but Hashem said you can't. And you have to do, right? The greatest attachment to Hashem is humbling oneself to Hashem, understanding or not. And we talked about that sort of like in big global universal terms. Tonight we're also going to try to speak in big global universal terms. And in a certain sense, again, I hope this will make this understandable on the one hand, and also make it that we won't get the wrong idea on the other hand in terms of how these generalizations should go. We should understand the division, which also in a certain sense, is the division between the Jewish people and the nations of the world, which on some level has its root in Gan Eden. Now, there were no Jews and Goyim in Gan Eden. There was only mankind that was in Gan Eden. And mankind didn't last in Gan Eden very long. But I'm going to try to show you, I'm going to try to explain to you what we mean by this, that in a certain sense, here is where the division lies, and where we're going to be able, hopefully, Bezus Hashem, to be able to see how this divide between Yisrael and Umas Olam, between the Navi, Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Navi of the nations of the world, how that works. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man, he created man and he placed him in Gan Eden, in the most perfect of places. And man was a perfect person, perfect, magnificent, way beyond anything that we see in ourselves at this point in time. Excuse me. Right? But way beyond. Selam Elohim. Man was created in the divine image of Chazal, describing it, whether metaphorically or otherwise. But man was gigantic. Man was radiant. He was from one, you know, tall and bright, a magnificent creature, a human being infused with a divine soul. And you know, the divine is infinite, so the divine is great and is bright. And so when you put something like that inside a thing, it, you know, it starts to just, it grows in order to simply be able, on some level, to be able to contain it, to be able to have it within it. That was Adam HaRishon. And then Adam HaRishon sinned. He chose to follow the advice of the snake and of Chava and eat from the Eitz HaDaas, from the tree of knowledge. And man shrunk. Man became man closer to what we know it. Batoshes alai kapecha. Hashem lowered the stature of man. Man became mortal. Man became limited in every way. And the light of the Tzelem Elohim, of the divine image, left the human being, not completely, but to a large degree. And man was banished from Gan Eden. Man was banished from that existence, from living in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then what happened? Then what happened? Ramchal, the Moshe Chaim Lutzato, explains in the Derech Hashem, in the beginning of the fourth chapter, and I'm sorry, in the fourth chapter of the second section of the Derech Hashem, that after the Chet of Adam HaRishon, after the sin of man, so as we know, Hashem blocked the gates to get back into Gan Eden. He blocked it with angels, right, with the Lat HaCheref HaMisapeches, with the blades of the swords, standing there, so to speak, guarding the path back to the Tree of Life. He didn't let us get back there easily. However, says the Ramchal, and he explains this idea beautifully, that he wanted to see who amongst mankind was trying to find the way back to Gan Eden. You can get sent out of Gan Eden and do, excuse the parallel, or the, I should say maybe the contrast, or the perpendicular, I don't know what I should say, right? But you could be like when Lot and his wife left Lahavdil Sodom, which ironically the Pasuk compares and says it was Kegan Hashem, it was like the garden of Hashem, like Gan Eden. But it was, of course, you know, Sodom was a very, very different version of it. And when they were taken out of Sodom, what did they say? They said, don't look back. Don't look back. You got out of there. It's a place of terrible destruction. You were a part of it. Don't look back. You don't want to go back there. You don't have a right to look back and somehow escape it at the same time. If you look back with yearning and with longing, then you're a part of it. And if you're a part of it, then you deserve to go up in smoke along with it. And that's, of course, what happened to the wife of Lot. Well, the person who leaves the Gan Eden, the person who leaves the Gan Eden, right? Correct?
I thought she was just looking back for her daughters.
It says she looked back.
I know.
It doesn't say what she looked back. People look back. They look back a lot. So they're all different pshatim. I'm telling you a pshat. They're different pshatim why she looked back. Okay. She looked back. She didn't disconnect. When they said don't look back, they said disconnect. Just go. And they didn't disconnect. And when we left Gan Eden, the question is, did we look back? When we left Gan Eden, did we look back? Did we leave longingly, oh, we miss home? Or did we leave Gan Eden and say, okay, there we were, we lived in the presence of Hashem, we had all of that. That was pretty intense. Let's move on to something else. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically, Okay, excuse me, I'm paraphrasing a little bit the words of the Ramchal. But he said, you know, the world, humanity, sinned and failed. Do they want to go back to where they were before? Are they resigned to their new reality? Or even worse than resigned, do they welcome their new reality? Their new world. The world which is not living, pure, innocent, not corrupted by personal desire in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Do they miss that? Or are they rather happier where they are? And you know, this is a constant struggle. We spoke a little while ago about what we have in Parshas Bahaloscha, where it describes part of the beginning of the end for the Jewish people in the desert was Vayisu Mehar Hashem. When it came time to leave Har Sinai, we said, let's go. And we ran away from Har Sinai. Har Sinai was like Gan Eden. Remember, at Har Sinai we also assumed immortality. And we also were right there in the presence of Hashem. And when it was time to leave, we ran away. And we didn't say, oi, we have to leave. And the way of Yisrael is supposed to be, ideal way is to leave the presence of Hashem. You know, the halacha is when a person walks out from the Beis HaMikdash, they don't turn their back and walk out. They turn around and, you know, there's a derech eretz, a longing, realizing where they were. Hashem wanted to look and see mankind. I created him in such a magnificent way, and now he's way in a different situation, a completely different matzav. Is that the way he wants to stay? Then that's the way he'll stay. But if he wants to come back, then I want to make it possible for him to be able to come back. And Hashem gave time, 20 generations. This is the way the Ramchal sees it. The 10 generations from Adam until Noach, then the 10 generations from Noach until the generation of the dispersion. And he found amongst all the seeds of what would be the 70 nations of the world that would emerge from the dispersion, he found just one person who wanted to go back. And that was Avram Avinu. Amongst all of them, Avram levadoi nifchar b'masav v'nisale v'nikfa liyais ilan mu'ula v'yokar k'fi metzius ha'anushis b'madrigosai ha'olyoina. He says, only Avram, and Avram alone was found amongst all of them to be in that lofty level, that level that at least sought to find its way back. And that's, you know, the way Chazal viewed it. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, three generations of greats, it took to the point by the time they got to Yaakov, Avram started the process. Yaakov, on some level, completed the process of Poska Zuamasam, where he got rid of the corruption introduced by the snake. That's what the Gemara says. Gemara has another opinion, which we understand in this light of what we just spoke about. Another opinion was that it was till we stood at Har Sinai that we weren't back to Gan Eden. But this is what it's about. It's about going back to be, as they would say nowadays, the man. To be Adam. To be Adam. To be the person about whom the creation, for whom, I should say, the creation was made. And so in last week's parsha, we have this very, very also, often, a statement that can be taken out of context and not understood well, a generalization, a misunderstanding. What is it? We learned at the beginning of last week's parsha, Zos HaTorah, Adam Ki Yamus Bo'el. This is the Torah. A man who dies in a tent, anybody who comes into the tent, will be tamei, will be impure. So the Gemara, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel in the Gemara says that this halacha only applies to Jews. If a Jew dies, he's metame everything in the building, but not non-Jews. Interestingly, it's not so simple that that's the halacha. We, in fact, adopt, the Shulchan Aruch says, a person should be careful even with a non-Jew. We don't necessarily pask him this way. But what was the basis for his ruling? His ruling was because he says, it says, Adam Adam who dies in a tent. You, Atem Kruyim Adam. Vein Umaysa Elam Kruyim Adam. Ein Aydeh Kechavim Kruyim Adam. You, the Jewish people, are called Adam. The nations of the world are not called Adam. So what does that mean? It means we say that people who aren't Jewish aren't human? No. That's not what it means. What it means is that the title Adam, which was given to that being, which was what Hashem had in mind, what He created in the image of God, what He placed in Gan Eden to be able to live in His presence, not the compromised being that's not recognizable by the Tzelem Elokim, that the image of God sort of like wore out and isn't there, but the consummate being, that's a role which only the Yisrael assumed. As Ramchal says, we made that our task. Avraham Avinu says, I want to be in the presence of Hashem. I want to be that ideal human being from before. When Hashem presented the Torah at Sinai, and as Ramchal describes it, was even a second chance for everybody, or not a second chance, a third or multiple chance. Remember how Chazal tell us that Hashem went to all the nations and said, would you like the Torah? Would you like the Torah? Would you like the Torah? Ramchal explains that Hashem said, you know, Avram already distinguished himself as the one. But you know what? Let me give everybody one more chance. We're again, so to speak, opening the doors to Gan Eden. Or at least the long hallway that leads eventually to Gan Eden. Maybe the nations of the world change their mind. Maybe they want to come. And Hashem opened that opportunity. We said, everybody said, I don't know, you want that? No, I'm not ready to do that. You tell us not to steal, we can't do that. You tell us not to this, we can't do that. Whatever it was, El Chazal described it. The Jewish people said, we want in. Whatever it is, we want in. We want to be there in the presence of Hashem. So again, generalize, I've heard that there may sometimes be a Jew who might want to steal. I've heard that that happens on occasion, Rachmana Litzlan. It happens. They, too, are compromising the specific role which we assumed for ourselves in the world, which is Nasa V'Nishma. Which is Nasa V'Nishma. That we want to be the ones who are going back to the Gan Eden. That's our goal. That's what we want. That's the benchmark for our lives, and that's the point to which we aspire. So therefore, we are called Adam doesn't mean somebody else is subhuman. What it means, really, in a certain sense, is everybody else is sub-divine. The Jewish people are meant to be divine, are meant to be able to live in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are meant to reflect that complete connection and identity with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And anything else, the nations of the world are not identified by that mission. When Hashem said, okay, here are the 70 nations, I choose Klal Yisrael, the rest not... The Jewish people, we defined ourselves as this is our mission. And it is based on that definition of ourselves as our mission that we end up with a Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu. But if we don't accept that mission, and instead we say we're very fine with the exile from Gan Eden, so then we get... They get, whoever it is, gets a Navi, a distillation of that. It doesn't mean that there isn't a person from the nations of the world who wouldn't pine for more. As Ramchal again himself writes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, so the nations got locked in. Avram versus the descendants of others. The Jewish people accepted the Torah, I've seen it, other nations didn't. But Hashem always left the door open for individuals of the nations, who would say, I want to go back to Gan Eden. And we welcome the wonderful Geri HaTzedek, the wonderful people who join and sometimes lead the rest of us back to find the right way and to be able to do that. And unfortunately, again, we have such a thing as Poshe Yisrael, who say, oh, if the Torah says you can't steal, then, you know, I don't want it, or I don't want that part of it. And goes, you know, that'll go on the way, that goes on the way out. But this is what the Jewish people's mission is. This is therefore what the Jewish people's essence is, and therefore this is what the Jewish people's representation will look like. The difference between Israel in that sense in the Umay Sayla. Now let's try to bring it a little bit now closer to be able to understand what we're speaking about here when we speak about Yisrael of Umay Sayla, when it comes to the Navi, the prophet of the Jewish people and the prophet of the nations of the world. I'm not going to be discussing with you how it is that Bilam was able to prophesize. How could Bilam see anything or know anything? At other times we've discussed different theories about it. Suffice it to say that there are, broadly spoken, there are two schools of thought. One school of thought being that Bilam somehow was able to have a real vision and a real prophecy through some kind of a different path or opposite path than the path of Moshe Rabbeinu. And then there's an approach like found in the Rishonim, like the Ramban and so on and so forth, that Bilam generally was just a great magician, great sorcerer, tapping into those kinds of things. And it was only at this event in our Parsha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a divine burst of real and incredible prophecy. Yeah. Ibn Ezra has his own version of the same. These are schools of thought about exactly what happened here. We're not going to get into the detail of that. What we are going to be focusing, however, more on is this idea of the difference, of the distinction which comes out between the distillation of the Navi of Yisrael, the best of the Jewish people and of the Umay Sayla. And it's really articulated in the Medrash. And I would note as well that there's a sefer called Akedas Yitzchak. It was written many, many hundreds of years ago by Rav Yitzchak Arama. And he writes very lengthy essays on every parsha. He has very, very, very lengthy essays filled with many profound things and hard to sometimes identify and find. He did Nafshi, a dear friend and mentor of Aaron Lapiansky, in his collection on Chumash called Yesodei HaTorah. Does a wonderful service of choosing some of the key sections of the Akedah. He does it as well in this Parsha. And the Akedah speaks about this contrast, speaks about this Medrash, speaks about this Rashi, speaks about this contrast between the Novi, the real one, the non-real one. And he looks at this Medrash. And this Medrash distilled two points when it spoke about the difference between the Navi of the Jewish people and the Navi that ends up happening of the nations of the world. And he speaks with all kinds of things, kings and wise people and prophets. Shlomo HaMelech built a Beis HaMikdash. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed it. Shlomo HaMelech sang praises to Hashem. Nebuchadnezzar blasphemed. Haman used his wealth to destroy. David used his wealth to build. Moshe Rabbeinu and the Umay Sa'ilam, Moshe Rabbeinu kept the Jewish people away from sin. The prophets of the Jewish people kept the people away from sin. And Bilam brought them to sin. And the prophets of the Jewish people had mercy on the Jewish people and on the world, whereas the prophets of the nations of the world tried to destroy for nothing. So we can talk here about bringing people to sin versus bringing people away from sin. We could talk about being destructive or being compassionate and trying to make build. This is a distillation of the differences that they're brought. I would note that you know that there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos which also speaks about the midos, the character of Bilam, the character traits of Bilam. It contrasts them not to Moshe Rabbeinu, but to Avraham Avinu. We've discussed it many times in the past. And the three things it says that are characteristic of a student of Avraham Avinu as opposed to Bilam HaRasha, and Rashi actually brings this out as you read along in our Parsha, was that Bilam was self-serving. Bilam was arrogant. Three things it says. Ayin Ra, Nefesh Rechava, Ruach Gevaya. He had a bad eye. He looked to others and he wanted to bring them down. He had a nefesh rechava, he had hefty appetites, desires. And he had a ruach gevaya, he was arrogant. Whereas Avraham Avinu had an ayin tova, he had a good eye, he wanted to do for others. He had a nefesh shefela. He was of simple appetites. He didn't want a lot for himself. And he had a ruach nemucha. He had a humble spirit. And in a sense, these three things, like the two things I do, you know, overlap with the two things identified by the Medrash, where he says one kept people from sin and the other one lured people to sin. One had compassion to try to help whether the Jewish people or the nations of the world, and one wanted only to destroy. He mentions as well over there that Chirei Fegideh and Nebuchadnezzar blasphemed. He said, I'm going to rise up on the high clouds and I'm going to be like God. Which he said not in terms of achieving the Tzelem Elokim, the divine image, that we also aspire to be like God. This is not the Adam El Elyon of Adam, as is written in Sfarim, that the word name Adam can be earth, Adam, or it could be Adam El Elyon, I'm going to be like Hashem, in the lofty sense. Bilam said it in Nebuchadnezzar said it in the power, in the sense of power. And here is where I want to try to show you and try to see with you together how that contrast is at the core of seeking to be in the Garden of Eden or seeking to run away from it. Because what chased Adam HaRishon from Gan Eden? It's a very simple sequence of the story. The snake comes and he starts to speak to Chava. He starts to speak to Eve, to the first woman in the world. And he says to her, you know, Hashem told you can't have anything from this garden. From all these beautiful, delicious, wonderful things that you see around you, Hashem said you can't have any of them. And the woman corrected him. He said, what are you talking about? Hashem told us we should have from all the trees of the garden. He made a beautiful garden. Hashem wants us to have. Hashem is generous. He is giving. The one thing Hashem told us not to have, the one thing Hashem withheld from us, is that tree over there, that tree of knowledge of good and evil. That tree we're supposed to stay away from because it's poisonous. It's going to kill us. On the day that we eat from it, we will die. Hashem wants us to have good. He's withholding from us the bad. And the snake said, no, you're not going to die when you eat from it. I can't believe it. You believed him? Hashem said, knows that that's the best tree in the whole garden. And that the day that you eat from it, you will be like him. You'll be like him. Yodei Tov Ra, with knowledge of good and evil. You're going to be like God. And he doesn't want you to be like him. He doesn't want you to have those opportunities. He wants to keep that for himself. Right? Rashi says, "Kol umman sayne as benu nosay." Every craftsman hates his competitors. He doesn't want you to have that which is good. And what happened? The verse goes on and it describes. So the woman looked at the tree, and it was very attractive. It looked very wonderful, very delicious. Whatever the descriptions, we're not going to get into the details. I'm way, way, way oversimplifying it. But the pasuk describes that she was attracted to what the tree had. And obviously, she was also attracted to some degree to what the snake said the tree had, which may not have been as readily visible on the tree. And she also believed what the snake said, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't so giving that he would want them to have everything good. That if he told them to stay away from it, it wasn't because he wanted their good, but because he wanted to deprive them of something. And they ate, and she ate from the tree. She chose, if you think about it, she chose the three midos of Bilam HaRasha. She chose to follow her desire to have a nefesh rechava. She chose to have an ayin ra, to have a negative eye, not wanting the good of others. Well, maybe she did, maybe she didn't. You might say it started with her projecting accepting, I should say, the snake's projection of that onto Hashem. She knew Hashem as someone who had done a wonderful thing, had created her and put her in this wonderful paradise and told her to have real enjoyment from it. But then the snake said, no, you're making a mistake thinking that Hashem is nice and good and generous. He's not. And she believed it. And by the way, what happens the next moment? She gives to her husband to eat from the tree. Why? Says Rashi. She says, if I'm going down, he's going down with me. You've heard that line before. Right? She said, if I'm going down, he's going down with me. There's that generous spirit. I want to share. Right? You know? That's what's going on. It's turned man in what he projects and what he feels, desire for himself or herself, begrudging of others. And you know also, in there is also arrogance. In there is also arrogance and haughtiness. Give me a chance. In there is also the arrogance, the haughtiness. There's a power play over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to be on top. I don't want to let him to be on top. If I eat this, I'll be able to be his competitor. I'll be able to be independent of him. The humility is absent. That's man's choice. That's man and woman's choice. They make a choice of self-centeredness rather than the choice of, we put it last week, of attachment to God, humility before God. True. But also, the mechanics of the choice of attachment to God and humility before God are the choice of pursuing desire, pursuing self-interest and begrudging others, wanting one's own power instead of being satisfied with humility, with not being the center. Those were the choices which were made. That's the difference between Adam before and Adam afterwards, man before and man afterwards. And that's why Avram Avinu, who displays these three characteristics in his life of generosity, of wanting to give, Avram Avinu recognized it in Hashem, as it says in his Psalm in Tehillim Pei Tes, Ki Amarti Olam Chesed Yibon, I said the world is built on kindness. Hashem is good. Hashem, Avraham Avinu was the one who didn't just teach us that there was a powerful God. He taught us there was a good and generous God. And Avraham Avinu himself lived that way, and he practiced that generosity. And Avraham Avinu was not desirous. He didn't want to keep the spoils of war, and he was humble. Anochi ofer va'efer. Avraham Avinu was choosing the midos of going back to Gan Eden. And Bilam HaRasha was choosing and happy with the midos of sin. And in a certain sense, that's a distillation. Who are the Jewish people? What is the mission statement to the Jewish people? You know, people say sometimes, you know what the purpose of a mission statement is? The purpose of a mission statement is to sit in a drawer and never be taken out. You know, you make a mission statement, you decide what's going to be, and then, you know, the real purpose of a mission statement is that you have it in front of you, and every single decision you make in terms of what you do and what you don't do in your business, in your organization, in your life, whatever the mission statement is for, is measured according to whether it fits within the mission statement. So we have a mission statement, and sometimes we let it gather dust, and sometimes we have it in front of us. But the mission statement of the Jewish people was back to Gan Eden. You know that every day that we take out a Sefer Torah, when we put it back in the Aron Kodesh, what do we say? We say, Etz Chaim, it is the tree of life for those who hold on to it. Remember what was in Gan Eden that we were told we had to be barricaded from the tree of life? Mm-hmm. The angels were put there to block the path to the tree of life, but then when we got to Gan Eden again at Har Sinai, Hashem gave us the tree of life, the Torah. When we see the doors close on it, you know, we get worried again. We say, there's the tree of life. We're closing the doors on that parchment scroll, but we're not. It's our tree of life. And then we say what? Chadesh Yomeinu Kekedem. Hashiveinu Hashem Elach. Hashem, bring us back to you. Restore our days like Kedem. What's Kedem? Kedem is where Gan Eden was. Gan Eden mi Kedem. We want to go back there. That's our mission statement. We want to be not creatures of indulgence, not creatures of Tzorus Ayin, of seeing others as trying to deprive, but as others trying to give. Creatures who accept with humility instead of wanting to reign supreme. That's the difference. And isn't that difference personified in Moshe Rabbeinu? Was there anyone who was more removed from the pursuit of the material than Moshe Rabbeinu, who went without eating and drinking and separated from his marital context and everything else? You know, the Rambam writes in the Moreh Nevuchim, the Rambam writes in the Guide to the Perplexed, when he writes about the different kinds of, so to speak, prophets and visionaries, and how can you tell the real ones from the other ones? And the Rambam writes that the biggest proof of a Navi is not whether he's able to split seas or do other kinds of miraculous feats. The biggest proof and most basic proof of a Navi is if you see him as a non-indulgent person, a person who's not pursuing the physical pleasures of the world, but instead his pursuit is a pursuit of that which is lofty and great. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. That's Adam HaRishon without sinning. That's the contrast. That's the difference that's between them. And when we speak about that, one ends up being the prophet of the Jewish people instead of the prophet of the nations of the world. And we say, this is what comes out. That's it. And that's why the Midrash says, look at the difference between the prophets of the Jewish people and the prophets of the nations of the world. The prophets of the Jewish people are trying to keep people away from sin, away from indulgence. And the prophets of the nations of the world are breaking down existing barriers and drawing people into worse and worse indulgence and sin. Because that's the choice. The choice is, are you turning back and trying to get back there? Or is the choice, are you not looking back? I don't want to go back to Gan Eden. Where's Sodom? That's why the nations, the prophets of the nations of the world, are destructive. And the prophets of the Jewish people are trying to be constructive and cry over and and try to warn and guide away from anything that will destroy, whether Yisrael or the Umas Olam. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't a destroyer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a creator. HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't one who withholds goodness. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in order to give goodness. That's the picture of the human being that a Jew is supposed to be. Simple in tastes, so they're not pursuing indulgence in sin, and generous and humble. Adam ele Elyon, like Nebuchadnezzar. I'm going to be like God in power, like Nebuchadnezzar. No. Adam ele Elyon, I want to be like God in terms of being good and compassionate. Chanon, Verachum, Erech Apayim, etc. All of those things. I don't want to do it. Go ahead. Yeah.
Moshe had two sons.
Mm-hmm.
What was his responsibility to them? Is it better that he should be for all the Jewish people except his sons or his family?
The question is a good question, but it's a little bit of a tangential question. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to discuss with you right as soon as we finish. Okay? Yeah. But it's a little bit of a tangential question. Why that ended up happening with the sons of Moshe? But it's a very good question, so please remember it. Come afterwards. I want to share with you something in this light that's very, very chashuv, very important, and relates to this. Because what we've seen here in the Gan Eden thing is, yes, about the person's own. Was Adam HaRishon pursuing his own physical pleasure? Was the Adam HaRishon willing to be generous towards others? Adam and Chava, were they humble or arrogant? But part of it was also, of course, as we saw, the complete projection of what they saw in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The snake said, Hashem isn't being kind to you. Hashem is trying to withhold from you. He's trying to maintain his uniqueness and his power structure. And that's the way, in a certain sense, it becomes our own perspective. I want to share with you something remarkable. It's from last week's parsha, but it's very much connected here to this image, to this picture, and we'll show you, Mirat Hashem, a little bit more how. In last week's parsha, our hero, Moshe Rabbeinu, has his moment of failure. The Mei Meriva, the waters of strife, that bring about the death of Moshe Rabbeinu in the desert, if Moshe Rabbeinu died, and not certainly his being held back from leading Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. What went wrong? Right? Most difficult of questions, what happened in the sin of the Mei Meriva? In that sin, what happened? What did Moshe Rabbeinu do wrong? What were the mechanics of it? What was the meaning of it? So the Rambam wrote about this. The Rambam in the Shmoyna Prokim, in his introduction to Pirkei Avos, the Rambam says as follows. In the fourth chapter of it, he says, you know, nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. We have a pasuk, there's no human being on earth that does only good and doesn't sin. Even Moshe Rabbeinu made a little bit of a mistake. Now, I warn all of us, myself included, who say, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, nobody's perfect. You know, you're right, nobody's perfect. We're really, really, really not perfect. Moshe Rabbeinu was a little bit imperfect. Let's not get look at Moshe Rabbeinu. Hey, yeah, he lost his temper too sometimes. Yeah, yeah. This is not exactly where we're going here. Moshe Rabbeinu was not perfect. Explains the Rambam. What was the problem? The problem was that at this moment the Jewish people came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, we said we want water. But we didn't say, Moshe Rabbeinu, can we please have water? But we asked in the most obnoxious way. He said, Moshe Rabbeinu, we have no water. Why did you take us out of Mitzrayim? You know, as soon as anything goes wrong, we're like, why did you take us out of Mitzrayim? We forget everything. We asked in a terrible way. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, Hashem says, Moshe Rabbeinu, go give him water. And Moshe goes to, you know, speak to the rock or whatever it is. Rambam's not focused at all on speak to the rock or hit the rock. Doesn't like many other Rishonim. Rashi taught us that difference. Many don't pay any attention to that, and Rambam included. And he says, but Moshe Rabbeinu got angry. He said, "Listen, rebellious ones, I'm going to bring water out from the rock for you." And he did. He brought water out from the rock, but he acted with anger. He spoke with anger towards the Jewish people, and says the Rambam, when Moshe Rabbeinu, who's supposed to be in the eyes, who it was in the eyes of the Jewish people, the most lofty human being, who they would look to and watch and want to emulate everything from him, and they see from him a flash of anger, that's unfortunately not a good lesson learned. The Rambam continues with another very interesting aspect of it, which is for another time. He has two sides to the problem of the anger. But the first side of the anger is that Moshe Rabbeinu was setting a bad example, a bad personal example. However, there's a big problem with the Rambam. And the problem is that Hashem doesn't get upset at Moshe Rabbeinu and say, Moshe Rabbeinu, you didn't control yourself. He doesn't say that. He says to Moshe and Aaron, Yam lehemantem bi. You didn't believe me. You didn't believe in me to sanctify me. Was this a failure of faith? Or did Moshe Rabbeinu just lose his temper? Why is this referred to as Yam lehemantem bi? This is one of the many questions which the Ramban asks on the Rambam. And there's a sefer, a little sefer called the Sefer HaZikaron, which was this little sefer. This is a modern edition. So half of it is an introduction by the person who put it out. Okay, but this is a Sefer HaZikaron. It's a little tiny sefer. And it was written by the Ritva, who was a student of the Ramban, who wrote this book to respond whenever the Ramban in his commentary on the Torah asked questions on the Ramban, especially the Ramban in the Guide to the Perplexed, but not only, this one is not in the Guide to the Perplexed, it's in the Shemayna Prokim. When he asked questions, the Ritva wrote replies to, so to speak, defend or explain the position of the Ramban. So the Ritva says, good question, Ramban. If the idea was that Moshe Rabbeinu lost his cool, then why do we call it a failure of faith? So listen to what he says. It's amazingly magnificent. It's a big chiddush. It's new, it's novel, but it's so rich. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he stood before Hashem after the sin of the golden calf, he said to Hashem, Hodieni no estrochecha ve'idoacha l'man emtzachem be'inecha. He said, Rabbeinu Shlomo, tell me, inform me of drochecha, of the way you function, so I can know you, so I can find favor in your eyes. And what did Hashem do in response to that? Hashem taught him the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachman, the 13 attributes of mercy. Hashem's answer to that request was, he says, let me tell you. And he showed him, Hashem, Hashem, God, Rachum, V'chanun, merciful, gracious, Erachapayim, patient, Rav Chesed, very kind, Emes, truthful. He taught him the Midos HaRachman, the Midos of mercy of Hashem. Says the Ritva, so why did Moshe Rabbeinu want to know these things, to find favor in the eyes of Hashem? So, on one level, the Rambam says, you know, if you understand Hashem, then you can relate to Hashem. But the Rambam himself in the Mor Nevuchim says that Moshe Rabbeinu also said, I want to know the way you conduct yourself, because that's the way I should conduct myself. If that's the way you conduct yourself, then that's the way I should conduct myself. Said the Ritva, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu the way he conducted himself. And what did he say? He said he's Erech Apayim, he's patient. And here Moshe Rabbeinu did not demonstrate patience. Said the Ritva, Moshe, the Rebbeinu Shem is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, if you really, really believed in the true patience, which is my essence, you would have acted with the true patience, which is my essence. It's not just you lost yourself in a moment. Moshe, you're so committed to being what God is. If you really knew and believed that this is what God was, you would have done it. It's a failure of faith. It's a failure of understanding, of accepting the Rebbeinu Shel. Such a powerful idea. Chiddush, to say that, oh, it must be that you didn't believe it, because if you believed it, you certainly would have done it. You know, that's a big statement to make. But on some level, we can certainly understand it. Had we really, really believed and understood that Hashem was patient, that Hashem wanted good, our own patience would not get lost. Look what the snake did. A perfectly happy person, human beings in Gan Eden, delighting in the world of generosity, and the snake puts in their mind an idea that maybe God isn't so generous. And suddenly man becomes greedy. Suddenly man becomes possessive. Suddenly man becomes power hungry. Because the snake said, I think God is power hungry. He introduced the poison of an idea that that's the attribute of Hashem. And the next thing you know, you see it on display in the behavior of man. Says the Ritva, Moshe Rabbeinu, you stood in the presence of Hashem. Hashem defined your whole frame of reference, your whole world. If you believed everything that he said, you never would have lost your patience. your world would have been a world of giving, of understanding, of tolerance. And you never would have lost your patience. If you lost your patience, it's because to some degree you don't believe all of that about the Rabbanu Shlomo. The loop is broken. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's the contrast. That's the contrast of Bilam HaRasha. Because, yes, in that moment, Moshe Rabbeinu failed for a moment. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's little flick of imperfection. And then he was back on. And he was still the Moshe Rabbeinu, not self-serving, not anything. The godly Moshe Rabbeinu, the Moshe Rabbeinu was called in the beginning of the last parsha of the Torah, the Zos HaBrocha Asher Beirach Moshe Ish HaElokim. And this is the bracha that Moshe, the man of God, conveyed to the Jewish people. He's the man of God. And Bilam looks at the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Chazal tell us, Mimona Afar Yaakov Umispar Es Reva Yisrael. Look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who counts the dust of Yaakov and enumerates and numbers Reva, the seed of the Jewish people. And he says, our Rabbeinu Shalom, he involves himself in all this dirty stuff. A world of projection. A world of, that's what you see in the Rabbeinu Shalom, and that's what you do in yourself. But that's what you have in yourself, and therefore that's how you see it in the Rabbeinu Shalom. We don't need snakes anymore. We have our own built-in mechanisms of imagining this stuff and projecting this stuff. Two opposite worlds. And that's the difference between the choice of Avraham, Av Hamoyim Goyim, the father of the multitudes of the world, a father giving, a father concerned with everybody, with building of the world, not self-indulgent, but putting themselves on the line in order to just take care of others, to produce others and take care of others and help others. As opposed to Bilam, who famously his name has as its root bola, to swallow. He's not a father who generates, he's a bolea who ingests and just takes and takes and sees the world as a world of taking and sees God as a God of taking. That's the difference. That's the mission statement of Israel, and that's the mission statement of those who didn't choose to turn back to Gan Eden. And of course, again, there are exceptions on both sides of the divide, but that's what a Navi of Yisrael looks like. And that's what a Navi of Umas Ha'ilam looks like. Ma bein Moshe Rabbeinu l'Bilam HaRasha. Ma bein Talmido Shel Avraham Avinu Talmido Shel Bilam HaRasha. And so therefore I say this to you, not just so we can understand what Bilam was, or we can understand what Moshe Rabbeinu was, but we should understand that Moshe Rabbeinu comes as a representative and a representation of the Jewish people. And he's like that because that's the mission statement of the Jewish people, which is that we're looking and we're saying, Chadesh Yomeinu Kekeden. We want to be back in Gan Eden before that terrible snake bit us and infused us with the corruption of his thinking, that the world is about withholding pleasures from others and indulging in them for yourselves, that the world is about a place of amassing power to be able to overcome others. No. The world is a place of non-self-indulgence. We keep ourselves away from that. The world is a place of giving, of wanting to see the happiness of others, the prosperity of others. The world is a world of onav ma'ayid, of deference before the true power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, instead of trying to flex and demonstrate our own power and our own muscle. That's what Jewish people have as our mission statement. That's why we had a Moshe Rabbeinu. And that has to be our individual mission statement. We don't have to think about being Moshe Rabbeinu. We just have to think about pursuing these characteristics of not being so self-indulgent, of being generous at the core, of wanting to see the success of others, of not reveling in power, but in fact delighting in humility. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu make us well focused to achieve our mission our true mission, and may we be zocha again to see it represented in Moshe Rabbeinu and Tchias HaMeisim and Gula Shleima B'mheira.